If you've ever heard me guest on other podcasts, or in media of any kind, you've heard the story of how this podcast all started for me. But just in case you haven't, here it is. The Chasing Earhart Project, which this podcast is a part of, officially launched in 2017. But 9 years before that, I started what I often refer to as the pre-research phase, a part of the project that lasted a little bit longer than the time we've been public. During that time, I made a list of 25 original guests that I felt I needed to convince to come on board and help me tell the most robust version of this story that at that time I felt I could. When we decided to go public, I began sending out emails, making cold calls, and trying to pull strings as a nobody with no experience and no recognizability in relation to the case. I contacted everyone on my list with basically the same request: come on my show, talk to me about your research, and give me an opportunity to give you a platform that I felt would end up being unique once we gained some traction. Of all the people I reached out to, perhaps one man stood out more than most when it came to his approach and his notoriety in the case. He's a decorated archaeologist with one of the most impressive resumes that I've ever seen, and we had a connection to the University of California, Riverside, from which he earned his PhD in anthropology in 1976. In his teens, he organized the Society for California Archaeology, and he's the former senior archaeologist for the International Group for Historic Aircraft Recovery, better known to this audience by its famous acronym, TIGER. He's authored countless papers, written a pair of books, both fiction and nonfiction, and is perhaps the most well-versed authority on the island of Nicomororo. He was also the very first guest I ever featured on this podcast over 7 years ago. When I reached out to him initially, I remember telling my wife that we'd likely never hear back. After all, what business does someone like me have in having a conversation with a man of his stature for a case I was so fascinated by? To my surprise, he said yes, and we went on to have what is still the most listened to conversation of this entire podcast. Since then, he's gone on to guest on the show a couple more times, and he was also the first guest I asked to appear on our Chasing Earhart discussion panel in Atchison, Kansas in 2018. When I came calling again for Vanished, he was in, and he gave some of the most important testimony that series had ever seen. I owe a lot to him, and tonight, after 6 years away from the show, he's returned to catch up with me in what I'm referring to as a career retrospective when it comes to his involvement in the Amelia Earhart Fred Noonan disappearance case. I didn't know it when I started this rebrand 25 episodes ago, but coming full circle has become a dominating theme throughout. Tonight, in perhaps one of the most special conversations I've had on this show, I welcome him back into the fold to discuss his thoughts on Castaway and gain some surprising insight into his feelings on the case to be made for Nicomororo. He's one of the most highly respected people in his industry, and his name will forever be synonymous with Amelia Earhart and Fred Noonan. Listen to the following conversation very closely. You're all about to learn something valuable, and I hope you take it to heart. Welcome back to Chasing Earhart. From Silver Spring, Maryland, this is Dr. Tom King. And we're live. Tom, it's great to talk with you. Welcome back to the show, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Well, look, let me just say this as we begin here tonight. When I began this journey with the podcast and the project, you were the very first person to say yes and come on the show when I was absolutely unknown. We had a great conversation. It's by far the most listened to episode we've ever had.
And
it's, it's true. You've since been on the show a couple more times throughout this process. And when I came calling for the Chasing Earhart panel in 2018, you were again the first person I asked, and you said yes to that as well. I have a huge amount of respect for who you are, what you've done, and all that you've contributed to this case. So with that,
In spite of all that,
I owe you a huge debt of gratitude, and I want to just publicly thank you for being so good to me over the years. So thank you, sir.
My pleasure.
Absolutely. Well, let's get started. So I guess the first thing I wanted to sort of get to here tonight is just the status of the overall case. I know you're not as involved as you once were in it. I know it's been some time since we've spoken, but we have several active investigations on different theories with, I think, everyone working toward the same goal, different ideas, different hypotheses. As someone who has been ingrained in the story for so long now, are these sort of white hot phases behind the scenes, these types of phases like the one we're in now, are they ultimately good, do you think, for moving the progressive needle, or is there a downside, in your opinion, to lots of theory moving in different directions?
No, I think there's let a million flowers bloom. I mean, there are things that are completely ridiculous, and there's simply no point in pursuing them. But on the whole, everything that people are talking about now is sensible in some context or other, and so it ought to be pursued.
Yeah, I agree. Well, over the course of the last 25 episodes or so of this show, you've been name dropped several times throughout conversations I've had with different folks. Dr. Richard Pettigrew, just on the last episode, credits you with getting him involved in the case. Kenton Spading speaks very highly of you. So does Jamie Lynn Bach. Bill Snavely thinks a lot of you, and he said so several times publicly. What do you
That's
think
really
when you
something.
Well, it's true. I mean, what do you think when you hear about folks crediting you and your work as sort of inspiration for them pursuing their own ideas and work in this case?
Well, I think the fact that it's inspiring them to pursue their own ideas is what's important. My ideas aren't important, but if I'm encouraging others to think independently, good.
Absolutely. Look, I look at this conversation tonight as sort of a retrospective, on your work on the case. Over the years, you've participated in multiple expeditions. You've been to Nicomororo. You're one of the few people to know what it's like. I was wondering if you could just sort of talk about some of the most important fieldwork moments for you. Do you have special moments that stand out to you throughout your journey in this case?
Well, sure. A lot of it is very, it's personal, it's not scientific. I very much associate with the island, and I feel good about having spent time there, having laying on my back under the whirling birds and having them not shit in my face. It's a lovely island, and it's a place of mystery and intrigue and scholarly interest, and there's a lot to be done there. I wish I had more time to do it.
What is your thought on the future of the investigation out on Nicomororo? Dr. Richard Pettigrew just talked about, their expedition and looking at the Turaya object out in the lagoon there. I think the future is bright there. Have you talked to Dr. Pettigrew? Have you had consultation on that?
Yes. And I think pursuing the Terai object is a very good idea. It's true that it's been looked at. We've walked all over that cove, but we weren't looking specifically for what now seems to have been there. And I think there's real merit in a more focused investigation, which is what Pettigrew intends to do. So I think I'm all for it, and I hope he gets the funding to make it happen.
Yeah, same here. I asked him this question. I'll ask you the same question. If you were directing the direction of this case in its entirety, where do you go next? Do you stay on Nicomororo? Is there other areas of interest? I know you've talked about some other areas that you've been consulting on over the years. Where would you take this case next if we strike out somehow on Nicomororo and just nothing is there for whatever reason? Where do you go next? What do you do next with this, do you think?
If there's a way to get to the next island over on which a guy who's done a lot of aerial imagery thinks he can see the Electra on the bottom of the lagoon. Well, now it's easy to say that's nuts, but it's easy to say it might be real. And I think it deserves a good look. I've encouraged people who've had ships out there and divers to take a look, and they haven't done it. I think that's unfortunate. We ought to cover all the bases.
I think I know the answer to this, but do you think we're running out of time, depending on where the plane sits, where it is in this world? Is time of the essence here?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, there could be a big old hurricane in there any day and a tsunami and wipe the whole place out. On the other hand, it could sit around for another 15 years. I don't know. Really take some serious investigation just to find out how likely it is that the area will suffer significantly in the near future.
I was thinking about this conversation yesterday, and I wanted to ask you, I re-listened to that original episode we had, and I want to ask you the same question I asked you then when you appeared on the debut episode of the podcast. I'm curious to hear if your answers changed. What is the most compelling aspect of Nick Amororo for you now, maybe even in retrospect? Has it changed?
No, I mean, it is the total body of evidence that points to Nick Amororo. And I've written about this. I mean, I've written books about this. Some things have proved to be nonsense, and I was misled. I misled myself. But others are quite viable. And, you know, we still have no good explanation for the post-loss radio messages.
Yeah.
Other than that she was there on the island and they were trying to transmit.
Yeah.
We still have no good explanation for all the archaeological stuff at the seventh site, other than that somebody who looked a lot like Earhart was camped there for a time.
Yeah.
Now, it doesn't mean that's true, but it's the best we've got. And those things all sort of go together. Now, it would be lovely to get back and do some more work at the Seven site. There's work to be done, but there's not the money to do it. And those of us who know about it are getting pretty long in the tooth.
Yeah.
So it's probably not going to happen, but it would be nice if it could.
Rick Gillespie returned to the show, surprisingly to me, but I was happy to have him just a few episodes back to promote his book, One More Good Flight. And I asked him something that I wanted to ask you. I was thinking of you when I asked him this question. You know, the interpretation of what happened to Earhart and Noonan out at Nick Amororo, has that evolved over the years for you based on new discoveries? I mean, I know you've talked a little bit about, like, well, you know, some of the evidence has turned out not to be so supportive. Has your interpretation changed as far as, like, how they got there, what happened to them when they got there? Has new evidence that's come to light sort of changed or shifted your opinion on that at all?
Not really. I mean, there was evidence that she had been there and manipulated.
Like at the seventh site?
Yeah, at the seventh site. I wrote about it in my novel, and I was wrong. Absolutely. Yeah. It turned out that she was not doing what we thought she was doing.
Right.
Okay. But she was doing something, and there's still good evidence that she was doing that something on that island. So we've still got a lot that could be done. It's just that it isn't exactly the same stuff that we thought.
Well, and one of the things I asked him about, and we went through some of the key pieces of evidence, the work that John Cada did on the sextant, 22V1, and the possibility of that maybe not being part of the Electra, discovering that new information, you know, that maybe disqualifies certain pieces of evidence. We have a lot of young people that have started listening to the show that want to do what you've done, want to get into archaeology. They're fascinated by it. One of the things I've really wanted to ask you is, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the process of having, you know, the personal integrity to say, hey, you know, this didn't turn out to be what we thought it was. That seems to be something that a lot of people just can't do, but, you know, you've been able to do it. A couple other people have been able to do it. What does it take for someone to do that, that's invested in this, that's worked so long, to be like, hey, you know, we were wrong?
Well, for me, it involves being 82 years old and having a bit of humility. That's one thing that 82 years will do for you, is beat a lot of humility into your head. And I'm a lot less willing to say unequivocally, now, this is what happened. I'd have to have real solid evidence to say that.
Yeah.
And I don't. There is good evidence on Nick Amororo. I think there's better evidence for her winding up on Nick Amororo than the alternatives, but it's still not 100%.
Yeah. Well, I know a lot of your interest in the case and a lot of your passion in the case has to do with the people of Kiribati, the public of Kiribati, including
Kiribati,
including former Nick Amororo settlers, people that were there. I mean, how was that over the years, I guess, influenced your understanding of the case and maybe what happened there with Earhart potentially?
Well, I respect what the people have to say who lived there and who made their way in that environment. I have tremendous respect for them.
Yeah.
But for the most part, they are not very forthcoming. They don't sit around and speculate about what happened to Earhart. They have other things to do. I can't blame them for that.
Yeah.
But
yeah. Well, I've asked this question a couple times. I asked Rick Pettigrew about this. I've asked Kenton about this. And I know it's speculation. I know we don't know. But over the years, as you've gone through this process and as you've studied the case, I know you've written about it. What do you think the final days were like for Earhart? I guess, and Noonan, maybe, potentially. We don't know if Noonan made it off the plane initially. We don't know. But
we don't know.
Yeah. I mean, what do you think those final days would have been like for her? I mean, Rick Pettigrew mentioned, you know, that they overflew the island about 7 days after July the 2nd. And if he's correct about the aircraft being in the lagoon or being covered, and they were looking for an intact aircraft that just wasn't there, they could have just maybe missed it. What do you think those final days were like for Earhart? It's a horrific idea to think about maybe what she would have had to go through on that island, possibly all by herself if she had lost Noonan on landing, or if he couldn't get out of the plane. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's one of the things that I wrote about in some length in the novel. Yeah. And it had to be horrible. The only hope that I would hold out is that she sort of lost her mind and wasn't really perceiving what was happening to her.
God, that's very sad.
Very sad story.
It is. I know there's a lot of misinformation out there in this story. As someone who's been researching it for so long, it's got to be frustrating, right? For someone that's been researching it with all this misinformation that kind of exists, you know, amongst all of the potential factual information that might be out there. Does that flood the case? Does it make it a lot more difficult to determine the actual fate of Earhart and Noonan, do you think?
I don't think so. But I've been fiddling with it and letting it beset me for so long that I probably am not a good witness. I mean, whatever happened to her was pretty dreadful.
Yeah.
Unless she just blew up in the airplane.
Right. You know, I don't know if the airplane is off Nicomoro, if it's in the lagoon, if it fell off the side and shattered into a million pieces, as Rick Gillespie has posited a couple of times. If it was ever conclusively discovered anywhere around Nicomoro, in the lagoon, off the island, somewhere like that, what impact do you think that has on the field of aviation archaeology?
Is there a field? I mean, it's all so squirrely that I don't think it'd make a big difference. I mean, suppose we were able to find, you know, the definitive piece of the Electra sitting off there encrusted in coral. People would come up with ways of saying that it had been brought in from Saipan or whatever. There would always be ways of explaining it away.
Yeah.
And as long as we've got some ambiguity, as we do, people will take advantage of that.
Yeah, that's very true. Have you thought any differently about Saipan, about Japanese capture? Is that one of those ones for you that's just out of the realm? Or do you think that's worth sort of looking at more aggressively? What are your thoughts on Saipan?
I'm not sure how you would look at it more aggressively. I mean, there are so many weird twists to that one that it would be extremely difficult to examine. I mean, we could look for pieces of the Electrum around the Isleto airport. But come on. I mean, the chances of finding something like that and having it not be mixed up with something else are just minuscule. So I wouldn't feel good encouraging anybody to put money into examining that hypothesis. I mean, one thing we've got to remember is that all these things cost money and they take money out of other pockets.
Right.
And you can feel like that's okay or you can feel like that's reprehensible. But either way, it costs bucks.
Yeah, it sure does. Boy, those searches get expensive.
Yes, they do.
They really do. We talked to Tony Romeo on the show, Deep Sea Vision. Their investigation turned out not to be the Electra 16,000 feet down. We have a lot of folks that are looking at different theories and sort of striking out on those theories. People have certainly not given up on it. It's a white hot story right now. Do you think we'll ever have any kind of definitive proof? And I guess, what does that even mean? I guess in this case, if the plane is lost forever or if it's smashed into a million pieces, do you think we'll ever have any definitive proof? And what do you think that proof might look like?
Can answer the second question more easily than the first.
Okay.
The definitive evidence that I think I would look for is, pieces of the airplane or pieces of other definitive Earhartiana. I wonder how that's going to be spelled.
I don't think I've ever heard that term before, but I love it. Yeah.
I made it up.
That's great.
If you could find some definitive pieces like that in positions that made sense, well, fine, but we haven't yet.
Yeah.
And I don't know that we're likely to.
Yeah. I worry about that because we've been looking at this for so long. I have not been, but just in general, people have been looking at this for
you
so
have,
long.
You have now.
Well, yeah, it's been a little while for me, but I always feel like sort of the dumbest person in the room, not to smash on myself, but I always feel like there's so many people in this case that are just so ingrained in it, so advanced at it. You know, they've done the work, they've written the books, they've done all the research. And for me, it's just, I'm still optimistic. I still feel like we're knocking on the door. I still feel like somebody's going to get this. I feel like we're going to get there. But I wonder for you, really, and for anyone, I guess, for Nika Mororo specifically, for Castaway, if it's ever definitively determined that she was there for you, is there any kind of vindication there for you at all after all the work you put in?
Oh, I don't feel like there's anything to be vindicated. I'm not interested in vindication. Gillespie may be, and that's appropriate because he was the one who pushed us at the beginning, you know, let's go look at Nika Mororo. Yeah. And he raised the money and he made it happen. So if anybody has chips on the table, it's Rick.
Yeah, that's true. I only have a couple more questions, really. This really just was a catch up for me and for us and for the listeners of the show. And the last couple of questions are really just about legacy. And again, I asked you this in the first episode, and I'd love to get your thoughts on it now. 2025, we're pushing 90 years on this disappearance in just a couple of years. After so many years dedicated to the case, I mean, I know you've done so much more than just Earhart, but after so many years ingrained in this case, what's her legacy mean to you personally? I mean, you've written fiction, you've written nonfiction, you've been part of so many expeditions. Can you speak on her legacy, at least personally for you, what it means for you?
I appreciate her having made all this happen. I mean, hey, it's justified a lot of trips to the beautiful island for me, but I don't know that there's a huge legacy involved. Mm-hmm. That's for others to relate to.
Yeah.
And others who loved Earhart as a person, mm-hmm. who respected her as an aviator. And that's not me.
No, I understand. Last question of the night. You know, you're one of the biggest names in the case. I know you're humble about it, but people have name dropped you so many times. You know, if you Google Amelia Earhart and you Google Amelia Earhart research, your name's right at the head of the pack. It's right at the top. If we never know, if we never find out what happens to her, are you okay with that personally?
Am I okay with that? Sure.
Yeah.
Because I've moved on to other things. I'm doing other kinds of research, and I'm interested in working with other people on other things. And if we never know what happened to Earhart, well, so be it. We don't know exactly what happened to Genghis Khan either.
That's a good point.
There are lots of historical mysteries that are not going to be solved, and that's the way history is.
Yeah, that's a reality you sort of have to look at when you get into these cases that we might never know. It's a very strong possibility. Dr. King, thank you so much. I really appreciate this. It's been a pleasure, as always.
A pleasure for me, too. Thank you.
This is Chris Williamson, and thank you for listening to this episode of Chasing Earhart. We hope you've enjoyed the show. Please visit us on social media, where we post each new episode as it airs, news, show information, and group discussion. Go to facebook.com/ChasingEarhart, and on Twitter and Instagram, search the handle @ChasingEarhart. Reviews are crucial to the show. If you enjoyed this episode, please head to Apple Podcasts to rate us and leave us a review. It really does help get the word out. Your editor and host for Chasing Earhart is me, Chris Williamson. The show is produced by my wife, Vanessa Williamson, with music by Dane Jarrus Schmidt. The opinions on Chasing Earhart are those of the individual guests and may not reflect those of Madhouse Films Incorporated. Madhouse Films Incorporated is not affiliated with the films or clips referred to herein. All clips and audio used in the podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purposes of historical entertainment and education, and no infringement is ever intended. Chasing Earhart is an exclusive trademark of Madhouse Films Incorporated and may not be used without the express written consent of Madhouse Films Incorporated. All rights reserved. Chasing Earhart is a Madhouse Films production. All rights reserved.